Likewise concerning the Greeks, likewise concerning the Germans and their future, and there may be perhaps a long list of such likewises. Granted, however, that all this were true, and with justice urged against me, what does it signify? What can it signify in regard to how much of the self-sustaining capacity, how much of reason and higher protection are embraced in such self-deception? And how much more falsity is still necessary to me, that I may therewith always reassure myself regarding the luxury of my truth. Enough, I still live, and life is not considered now apart from ethic. It will have deception, it thrives on deception. But am I not beginning to do all over again what I have always done, I, the old immoralist and bird-snarer? Talk unmorally, ultra-morally, beyond good and evil? 2. Thus, then, have I evolved for myself the free spirits, to whom this discouraging, encouraging work, under the general title Human, All Too Human, is dedicated. Such free spirits do not really exist, and never did exist. But I stood in need of them, as I have pointed out, in order that some good might be mixed with my evils, illness, loneliness, strangeness, acedia, incapacity, to serve as gay spirits and comrades with whom one may talk and laugh when one is disposed to talk and laugh, and whom one may send to the devil when they grow wearisome. They are some compensation for the lack of friends. That such free spirits can possibly exist, that our Europe will yet number among her sons of tomorrow, or of the day after tomorrow, such a brilliant and enthusiastic company, alive and palpable, and not merely, as in my case, phantasms and imaginary shades, I myself can by no means doubt. I see them already coming, slowly, slowly. May it not be that I am doing a little something to expedite their coming when I describe in advance the influences under which I see them evolving and the ways along which they travel? 3. It may be conjectured that a soul in which the type of free spirit can attain maturity and completeness had its decisive and deciding event in the form of a great emancipation or unbinding, and that prior to that event it seemed only the more firmly and forever chained to its place and pillar. What binds strongest? What cords seem almost unbreakable? In the case of mortals of a choice and lofty nature, they will be those of duty. That reverence which in youth is most typical, that timidity and tenderness in the presence of the traditionally honoured and the worthy, that gratitude to the soil from which we sprung, for the hand that guided us, for the relic before which we were taught to pray. Their sublimest moments will themselves bind these souls most strongly. The great liberation comes suddenly to such prisoners, like an earthquake. The young soul is all at once shaken, torn apart, cast forth. It comprehends not itself what is taking place. An involuntary onward impulse rules them with the mastery of command. A will, a wish are developed to go forward, anywhere, at any price. A strong, dangerous curiosity regarding an undiscovered world flames and flashes in all their being. Better to die than live here, so sounds the tempting voice, and this here, this at home, constitutes all they have hitherto loved. A sudden dread and distrust of that which they loved, a flash of contempt for that which is called their duty, a mutinous, wilful, volcanic-like longing for a faraway journey, strange scenes and people, annihilation, petrifaction, a hatred surmounting love, perhaps a sacrilegious impulse and look backwards to where they so long prayed and loved, perhaps a flush of shame for what they did and at